Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle, coming up on the programme this week.
Let's be clear. Loneliness was an issue before the pandemic, but I think certainly the pandemic and lockdowns have exacerbated it for some people. But also, sadly, we've had people now experience loneliness and isolation who've never experienced it before.
Maybe some people feel they're not worthy of joining an organisation, or why would they want to spend time with me, or what benefit would I get from that? That's for other people, it's not for me. But we have to engage those people a little more, don't we?
If you are feeling lonely, if you're feeling isolated, don't be afraid to ask for help, because it's a strength, it's not a weakness.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
The home of the UK's conversation about mental health. Welcome to the podcast. My name's Mick, and thanks for checking us out once again. And I've got a two-parter for you on this week's episode. A lot of conversations about mental health coming up, and plenty coming up in the next few weeks as well. So although this one is a timely one, I wanted to make sure that both of the conversations went out this week. The first of them is with the Batley and Spen MP, Kim Leadbeater. That's the first time Kim's been on the programme, and it's been great to get her on. She is part of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Loneliness and Connected Communities, which is supported by the British Red Cross to basically help tackle the underlying causes of isolation. Actually, there's some new stats out that look at the impact of isolation and loneliness on people's both mental health, but their physical health as well. So check out these stats, right? So if you are lonely and you suffer with or from loneliness, you can increase your risk of dying by 26%. A 26% increased risk of dying from being lonely. Now that's the equivalent of smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Now that's huge, isn't it? Now, two-fifths of people say that the pandemic has had a lasting effect on relationships and social connections, while around one in three say they've had difficulty reconnecting with friends and family as we've recovered from these restrictions that we've been living under for the last couple of years. So this is an issue which existed before, and it's certainly an issue which still exists now, despite everything that's happened in the last couple of years, and maybe even compounded by everything that's happened in the last couple of years. So Kim Leadbeater is on the way. And then a slightly different conversation with someone with a very similar name, Helen Leadbeater. Now, Helen is from the Children's Society. Now, we caught up with Helen in November of 2020, and we were talking about the impact that lockdown was having on young carers. These are young people who look after a family member within their home. And of course, during lockdown, they were unable to get hold of some of the support. They obviously weren't going into school, so their connections were really sort of broken at that point. Some of the services that they were accessing as well shut down as a result of the lockdown. They were having a really difficult time of it. And as part of that conversation, I said to Helen, you know, what are the main issues here that you're tackling with? And one of the things she said was that they had an issue with the number of, or knowing the number of young carers that there are in the country, that it was all on guesswork and estimates. And actually, the thing that they needed to do was to basically get a sense, a register, if you like, of young carers, so that those who needed help could get help, so that they could access support, and then this wider support could come around them and the people that they were caring for. And the idea that Helen had, and it was one which we promoted as well through Mental Health Monday and the work I do working on the radio, was to get the government to include a child's carer status on the school's register, the school's census. So at the moment, if you're, for instance, like a kid who's in a military family, that will sort of flag up at school, and the school will actively sort of find out about that child, because it means that their life is a little bit maybe different to other children, various other things that a child would be on the school's register, the school census for. And I'm really pleased to say that off the back of the work that we did with the Children's Society, with the backing of the Carers Trust, through our Young Carers Count campaign, the government have said, yeah, that seems like a good idea. And as part of their Adult and Social Care Bill, they're going to introduce that as a policy. So from next year, in schools, young carers are going to be counted. Young Carers Count has worked. You know, we've got a campaign win here, which is fantastic. And credit to those charities that I mentioned, the Children's Society and the Carers Trust, for flagging this as an issue. And it has been fantastic to help get this one over the line. So as of the start of next year, 2023, schools will start to register whether a child is a young carer. And with that, huge benefits, such as the fact that They will get the support. There'll be more understanding of maybe why they're late or they didn't finish their homework. There'll also be that support network that comes around the family as well. This could make a difference to literally thousands and thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of children's lives. So I'm really, really proud of it. It's why I wanted to have that conversation as well. So Helen Ledbetter from the Children's Society is on the way. First up, Kim Ledbetter, talking about loneliness. And included within this is a Red Cross helpline that you can call if you want to get involved in that. But I said to Kim that, you know, people will think that loneliness is just an emotion that doesn't have a long-term impact. But quite clearly, there's something serious going on.
There is, very much so. Chronic loneliness can have a serious effect on your physical and mental health and well-being. And that's why it's really important that in Loneliness Awareness Week, we're having that conversation, we're starting that dialogue again, which we've done a lot of work on pre-pandemic. And then sadly, over the last few years, we've got loneliness hitting more people than ever. So it's really important that we revisit that conversation now.
Yeah, you mentioned the COVID pandemic, and we don't like to keep talking about it. But actually, I think at the time people thought, oh, maybe there are going to be people isolated now. Maybe I do need to go and pick up the shopping. Maybe I do need to sort of take action to support someone. And I think 2 in 5 people as part of the survey out today said that there are lasting effects on relationships through COVID. So this big shock or jolt that we got maybe hasn't had this long-term impact of positivity that people may have hoped would come from it. There are still a lot of people struggling, I guess.
Very much so. Look, let's be clear. Loneliness was an issue before the pandemic, before the lockdowns, but I think certainly the pandemic and lockdowns have exacerbated it for some people. But also, sadly, we've had people now experience loneliness and isolation who've never experienced it before. So that's why it's really important to go back to this. And I think you're right. One of the things that I really hoped for was that the togetherness and the sense of neighbourliness that we had during lockdown would be continued after. But it's very easy, isn't it? We go back to our jobs, we go back to our lives, and it's very easy to lose sight of those connections that we were making when times were really difficult. So I guess that's a call to action in Loneliness Awareness Week, is to say, do not stop checking in on your neighbours and your friends. And as we do get back to whatever normal looks like now, if there is somebody missing from your local choir or your running club or your church, just give them a shout, give them a nudge and check in on them, make sure they're okay, because we should never lose that sense of togetherness that we saw during the deepest, darkest days of the pandemic, even when times were so tough.
As a working MP, you'll pick up, you know, case studies all the time, people who've got issues. You're relatively new to the role, but can I ask you, in terms of loneliness, isolation, what when it comes up, raised in a surgery or something like that, what does that sound like, and what are the impacts on your own constituents?
Well, interestingly, it's very unusual for someone to present themselves as being lonely. And this was what my sister Jo Cox found when she was the MP, that knocking on doors, people wanted to have a chat. They wanted someone to listen to them. They wanted a friendly ear and a smile. So people won't come forward and say, oh, I'm really feeling lonely. They might present with other issues, but then the conversations that you have with them, and GPs report this as well, they might come with a minor medical ailment, but actually they want that conversation and they want that human interaction. So I guess you've got to pick up on those signs. And then what you can do is signposting to groups, community groups, organisations where they can get that support network in place. And the good thing is, I mean, in my constituency and across the whole country, we've got so many brilliant voluntary groups and organisations where you can go and have that social interaction that we all need as human beings. So I think as MPs, as GPs, as anybody who is coming across members of the public on a regular basis, just look out for those signs and make those suggestions where you can. I know certainly for me as an MP, you know, this can be quite a lonely life sometimes. So I always try and get out and about and do as much as I can with groups of people to have the conversations that we all need.
Everyone remembers stories growing up about people down your street and everyone knowing everyone else's business. And I think we almost wore a badge of honour in recent years that you didn't know your neighbours' names because they were just, you know, the ones with the crying kid or the barking dog or all those things. Where I think that sense of community, that sense of belonging, that sense you're part of something can really improve your sense of mental health and well-being. But I also think that maybe some people feel they're not worthy of joining an organization, or why would they want to spend time with me, or what benefit would I get from that? That's for other people, it's not for me. But we have to engage those people a little more, don't we?
Yeah, I think there's a few things there. I think that sense of togetherness that we get is really, really powerful. And like you say, there's an element of nostalgia associated with that. But also we see it, sadly, we see it when things are bad. So we see communities rally round when we have tragedies. And my thing is, why can't we keep that going when things are not that bad? You know, we saw it when Joe was murdered. The way that the community across Batley and Spen pulled together was amazing. We've seen it, you know, with other issues and other tragedies. But we also see it in good times as well. I mean, the way that people came together over the Jubilee weekend was brilliant. And it just shows you that people do want that opportunity to connect. But sometimes they almost need to be given permission or validation. I think the other way of framing it, like you say, that thing around people feeling, well, why would I reach out to somebody or why would I go join something? Sometimes you can do it in a more subtle way by becoming a volunteer yourself. So you might not be the one who wants to go and ask for help, but you can be the one who offers the help, because there's so much power in volunteering at local groups and community organisations, as well as being a user or a member of a group or an organisation. So I think whichever way you want to frame it, just get involved in stuff in your community. And then we've got to call on the government, obviously, to do their bit. And build communities where people have got opportunities to come together, support the voluntary sector properly, so it's properly funded, so that we can create those opportunities. And then by taking this holistic, multi-layered approach, we can ensure that every single person has those connections that we all innately need as human beings.
I think so. And I think there's a lot in, you know, that thing where we used to have hobbies, now we've got side hustles. This idea that if you're making something or doing something, you can't just do it for fun or because it, you know, it gets you in touch with a few people in your local community. It's because you're then trying to sell it on, you know, Facebook or so. And part of me thinks those old-fashioned things, I'm calling them old-fashioned, they don't need to be old-fashioned, of playing football, going down, sitting in a room with some people, the bingo halls, all those sorts of things. There was a sense in that. And there's a wider conversation around the decline of like organized religion, but at least that was one place where everybody would go every Sunday and they would see each other and they would acknowledge each other and they would find out if little Johnny was doing well at school or if such a body's leg had been broken in a whatever. You'd get all of those conversations. And we've slipped away and we all go, but I'm busy, Kim. I don't have time. I'd love to go and spend more time with other people. I'd love to reach out to this person or that, but I don't have time because I'm too busy working or I'm too busy doing X, Y, or Z.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. Find something that you enjoy doing. And I always default to sport because that's my background. I played hockey for 30 years and it wasn't just about the hockey. It was about going to the pub afterwards. It's about chatting. And what you get with, particularly with team sports is, but also joining a club, you get people from different backgrounds coming together, having those conversations. It's really, really powerful. So I would encourage anybody to have a look at what is going on in your neighbourhood, in your community, and throw yourself into something. And even if it's through your kids, you know, if your kids play for a sport or join a choir or a gymnastics group or whatever it is, go along and support, and then you'll get the benefits of that as well. And for me, those groups and organisations are the lifeblood of our communities. You know, because of the last few years that I've spent working in the voluntary sector before coming into politics, it's everything that I believe in really passionately. So we've got to support those groups and organisations. And that is a way that you can address things like loneliness and isolation almost by stealth, because you're doing something that you love.
Absolutely, absolutely. For people who are thinking, oh, it's loneliness, what, it can't be that bad a problem. The British Red Cross have actually got a national support line where people can call on that one. And I'll mention the number now, 0808 196 3651. That's 0808 196 3651. And Kim, I've got to tell you now, as somebody who speaks about mental health a lot, I often give out helpline numbers, Samaritans 116, 123. Visit the Hub of Hope to find local groups. Here's another number. Are we not politically, are we in a place where we can start asking a question as a mental health community to say, well, can you give us a three-digit number? Can we have a three-digit 999 equivalent that if someone is feeling lonely or they're thinking about maybe they've got depression or they want to find out whether or not their son is showing signs of an eating disorder, that if there was a three-digit number that you could pick up that everyone knew about, people would be minded, would they not, to actually take steps and to do something like that? Is that something that we could start to action as a country?
I think that's a really good idea. Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked about and the government's talked about for several years now, putting mental health on a level with physical health. And I think we have to do that, A, because there's such an intersection between the two, but also because of the past few years, we have got a mental health crisis in this country. I think you're right. I think we need to make it more easier for people to get help around mental health issues. And you know, when it comes to loneliness, you know, loneliness isn't a mental health condition, but there's just been research out again only this week where loneliness can certainly lead to mental health conditions. So I think there is an issue across the country around help and support for people, but also prevention. So that's why I guess building these strong, well-connected communities is really important so that we don't get to that desperate point Because we've got to do both. We've got to help people who are struggling, but we've also stopped people getting to that point already. And the good thing is, look, I'm sure you know this, but there's loads of organisations who do important work in this area, whether it's those who look specifically at loneliness or those who look more broadly at mental health. Certainly Young Minds, who do stuff with young people and mental health. Mind, as you say, the Samaritans. And you've also got really good community groups like Andy's Man's Club, who deal with men and mental health. So there's loads of help out there. I guess one of the key messages this week is, if you are feeling lonely, if you're feeling isolated, don't be afraid to ask for help, because it's a strength, it's not a weakness.
Kim, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate today. And I hope this message continues to spread and people really do absorb some of the messages and really take action on it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mick. Take care.
Batley and Spen MP, and she's also part of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Loneliness. Kim Leadbeater, I guest on the programme this week in part one of Mental Health Monday. But let's move on to part two. And I set this up before our conversation with Kim, that there is a major change on the way, and hopefully a life-changing change, if indeed that is a phrase, on the way for thousands of young carers, with a big win for the Young Carers Count campaign, working with some fantastic charities, including the Children's Society and the Carers Trust, to raise awareness of the fact that we need to know how many children and young people in the UK are young carers, so that we can wrap them in the support that they need, and with that, follow them through their education, support them through their education, and support also the people that they are caring for. Let's have that conversation now. We'll get a sense of where we were coming from and where we've got to now, and hopefully a sense that the Young Carers Count campaign, which we kicked off in November of 2020, has made a real difference.
Yeah, we're really pleased. I'm really pleased about it. And you're right. So the numbers of young carers that we know of are based on estimates. We think they're good estimates, but the research has more recently highlighted an estimate of 800,000 secondary school aged young carers. And so we still think that's the tip of the iceberg, because of course that figure doesn't include those under the age of 10, which we know are significant numbers, and also that it probably doesn't capture all of the numbers of young carers. So yeah, to be able to include young carers on the school census, and as you say, the powers that be have made that happen, we're really, really pleased and really looking forward to seeing what the results are from that census early next year.
Yeah, so it kicks in relatively quickly, doesn't it? So schools will include that information that will, I guess, follow a child through their education as well. What difference do you think it will make to a child who is on that list and is known about as a young carer, compared to a child who previously hadn't been?
Well, in order to know who the young carers are, that would make us all, including schools, accountable for their needs. And young carers, they do have certain rights, and particular rights that are outlined in the Care Act and Children and Families Act of 2015. And what those rights include are that young carers are entitled to have an assessment of their needs, their own needs as a young carer, and how their caring responsibilities impact upon their own well-being and childhood and experience of childhood, and that's assessment that should automatically also trigger an assessment of the needs of the person that they care for, and be that a parent, be that a grandparent, be that a sibling. Some young carers care for a number of different people within their family who may have needs. And so that should also trigger an assessment of those needs in order to look at what support they might need, in order to then reduce the impact or negative caring responsibilities that young carers are carrying out. So why it matters is because it will make us accountable and make sure we are looking at and thinking about the support needs of those young people.
There's obviously the structural changes that come in as a result that you've just highlighted there. But actually then the experience of that young person is a life-changing one, isn't
yes.
it? If that support structure comes around a person that previously, a young person that previously didn't have it, you know, that's a huge difference to someone who may have been struggling for any number of years.
Yeah. I think with the young carers, often we can call them, say, being like hidden or hidden from view. I think it's important to remember that actually when we talk to young carers, they say things like, One thing that really struck me was a young person said to me, do you know what, I'm not hidden, I'm not hiding, you just don't see me. And it's just like, that's fair, it's fair enough, it's a fair comment. And I think what this will do, the census, is make sure that people are accountable and are looking and are thinking about who are these children and young people with caring responsibilities that are unpaid carers for someone in their family, and what can we do to help, basically.
And of course, as well, this is the sort of a success that the campaign has been. You've got a win for the campaign here, Helen. But at the same time, this is the start of new work, isn't it? Because I guess now you've got to make sure that the checks and balances are being followed, and that the cases that are highlighted, maybe 100,000 more, maybe 200,000 more, maybe more than that, they all have to be followed up, don't they? And actually, that needs to be part of a process. And that's a new process that, you know, that schools and local authorities will have to take on.
Yes, that's right. And so I think the rights for young carers are there, but we're not necessarily, there's no accountability for monitoring as to whether those rights are being carried out. So, but with better monitoring and with systems in place, such as the school census, and therefore asking who are young carers, have they had an assessment of their needs, is there support being provided to their family, it strengthens the monitoring of those rights that are already there for young carers. It means that they'll have access, better access to support systems in place for young carers.
Can I just on a personal level as well, for those young carers, particularly within a school environment, you mentioned there the support systems that will come into place, but can I just, in terms of just maybe even understanding, you know, a teacher that understands why a child is coming into school with maybe a uniform that's not clean, or has not been able to complete a homework task, or has showed up, you know, 10 or 15 minutes late. A sense of understanding from the teacher, you know, that comes with the, you know, it's obviously very taboo to do some of those things in that school environment. But that understanding that prevents, you know, a snarky comment from a member of staff, I guess as well makes that child's life so much easier.
Yes, that's right. So what we ask for is that there is someone in the school, a lead teacher or lead school staff, pastoral support leads, whoever it is, that has responsibility and understanding of the needs of young carers, and somebody that those young people can turn to and say, do you know what, I'm a young carer and this is what I have to do, and this is why my homework's late, or I was late to school this morning because I have to take my younger sibling to school first, and I have these responsibilities and it affects me, as opposed to punishing or thinking that the young person themselves isn't achieving, but recognising why these impacts are happening for them.
Do you think schools are currently equipped with that trained member of staff, or is that something that will need to be included now and introduced?
There are many schools that are doing great work and do have those systems and those teachers or member of staff in place. So at the Children's Society, we work in partnership with Carers Trust, and we have our National Young Carers in Schools programme that provides schools with tools and resources they need, which can include training for school staff about thinking about how to spot the signs of those pupils who are young carers, how to identify those young carers in their schools, and what resources they might need in the school so that young carers themselves can come forward and ask for help, feel confident that they will be believed and trusted and respected for what they are saying as well. So there are many schools that we know do have these standards in place, and we also know that there are many schools that might need a bit more support or help or access to our resources to be able to implement that now that they will be accountable, as we've said, for counting and including their pupils who are young carers within their census later this year.
What are you expecting to see, do you think, once you start to see the first sets of census results?
I'm really interested to see the first results. And as it's going to be carried out year after year, I think we'll be able to show the differences and trends. So I think it will show a better picture of how many young carers are out there. I think it will also show the numbers of perhaps schools who may not know or be aware of who all of their pupils are who are young carers. So I think it will show an interesting picture of where we might need to put a bit more support in place about how we can be working with schools themselves to be able to identify and think about their pupils who are young carers.
Are you expecting to get a raft of phone calls from schools who kind of go, we didn't even know about this situation, please help, what training can we put in place, what support might be there from an organisation like yours?
Yes, I hope so. We would really welcome that. I think that would show, you know, the willingness of schools to be thinking about the well-being of their pupils and those pupils that are young carers as well. So I would absolutely welcome that raft of phone calls from school saying, let's get some training in place, let's think about who our young carers are. I think that would be a really positive outcome.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, Helen. That phone will start to ring, and then we shall see. But it's all for a really good reason. Can I bring you back to sort of so when we first spoke, we across our radio network ran with our Young Carers Count campaign, in that they count that you had to listen to them, but also that was a need to count the number of young carers out there so those support networks could be put in place. And we heard so many stories from young carers and their sort of local support teams about why this was so necessary. And there were politicians who came on board, the Carers Trust you mentioned before, came on board as well to support the Young Carers Count. Do you think that campaign and the profile that we gave it through our radio coverage has made a difference and has helped us get to this stage?
Yes, I think so. I think during the last 2 years, during the pandemic, I think it was recognised that the vulnerability of young carers perhaps increased because of the pandemic, or that there was a focus around thinking about unpaid carers, including young carers, during the time. So I think it did make a difference. And I think it showed that, as you put it, the powers that be, but those in the government Department for Education, we're listening, working with ourselves at the Children's Society, yourselves through that campaign, and our colleagues who we've worked in partnership with for many years at Carers Trust, and we're listening. And that's what made part of the change, and a really welcome and positive change as well. We have been asking for and thinking that young carers should be included in the school census for many years, and I think that the kind of the push through COVID, through these campaigns, actually made the difference, and people listened and made that change, which is really welcome.
It is fantastic, but it's good to know as well that, you know, that when people do hear a common sense argument, actually, you know, and it absolutely made sense, you know, and there was a structure in place, when they heard about that and when the profile was raised around it, that it was something that action could be taken on, that we weren't asking for the world here. This was a relatively simple change, but will make a huge difference. And I think sometimes politicians in particular just need a nudge sometimes to get a sense of why it would make a difference.
Yes, I think that's right. But and as you say, would make a significant change. And it seemed and was seemingly a simple task, just add young carers to the school census, to that survey. But actually, by doing that, it does increase, as we said, the accountability of schools. So it will be a big shift and a big change. So a simple task, but actually with quite a significant and large outcome for young carers. So yeah, it's very welcome.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.